There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Your main event, introducing the hosts of Wrestling with Freddy, Jeff Dye, and Freddy Prinze Jr.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a brand new episode of Wrestling with Freddy, now known as Wrestling with Prinze. In today's news, we'll mainly be focusing on AEW Full Gear. What an absolute fantastic pay-per-view. And in WWE news, you guessed it, Mustafa Ali lost again and tried to get daps from Ricochet, only to realize Ricochet was just doing a fist bump instead. Good evening and good luck.
There we go. Hey.
Ladies and gentlemen, with me as always is my co-host with the Momost, Mr. Jeff Dye. How are you, sir?
Feeling good, buddy. I'm excited to see your face. Excited to do another week. Also, what a great week of wrestling.
It was a great week of wrestling, wasn't it?
It was fantastic. There was so much good stuff. Everything was, I was at zero complaints. I still have a worst of the week, but you know, that just means worst of all the great wrestling we saw.
I watched a pay-per-view, Mr. Dye, called AEW Full Gear. And I thought it was absolutely great. From the beginning all the way to the end. And I would love to just focus on that.
Yes, let's jump into it, buddy.
First of all the entrances on AEW felt like they sped them up a bit so they could get more time in the ring. And I loved that. But we're going to start the show with the steel cage match of Jungle Boy versus Luchasaurus. And I did not think, in a steel cage, I did not think I was going to love this match. I just thought it would be okay. But I absolutely loved the story they told. And my wife even watched this match with me. So just to break this down for you guys, they call him Jungle Boy. I don't like his name.
Jungle Boy Jack Perry, official.
That's right. Jack Perry. And I think eventually it's going to just become Jack Perry. And Jungle Boy will be like the nickname that they throw in every once in a while. For those of you who don't know, this is the son of Luke Perry. Luchasaurus was his tag team partner, now his bitter and mortal enemy. who is managed by the awesome Christian Cage, who we all know as Christian from WWE. And this story of hatred has been brewing for quite some time. But I just want to give people who aren't the avid wrestling fans a little backstory. Imagine being the son of Luke Perry, star of 90210. And Luke Perry, as we all know, has sadly passed away. Some of his newer fans may remember him from the show Riverdale, which is on the CW. And I don't know how he passed, and I wasn't close with Luke. I only met him a couple times, but Sarah was. Sarah was friendly with Shannon Doherty and Luke, and knew them both very, very well. I became friends with Brian Austin Green because he was on my sitcom, and he and I are still tight to this day. But I only met Luke maybe twice. I think just once, just to say, hey, what's up? Imagine being the son of Luke Perry, and instead of following in your father's footsteps, you're going to be a professional wrestler. And the obstacles that would be in your way in the wrestling community, when every single professional wrestler knows your dad was the guy from 90210. This kid has had to eat so much shit his entire career. He is not a big man like his father. He's slight. He's not a tall man either. Neither was his father. So those alone make it difficult for you to break out of the indies. There's lots of average height dudes in the indies, but very few make it to a high level on the big shows like AEW, WWE. This kid has had obstacle after obstacle placed in front of him, loses his father at a much later age. And I keep pushing this father thing because there was a beautiful moment in the match. I didn't know what to expect. The match starts and he starts hot. He's kicking knees and body shots and face shots. And all of a sudden, Luchasaurus has had enough and just smashes Jack Perry and just beats this kid up over and over. And I'm watching this up in the bedroom. Sarah's in my bedroom because my son was watching My Hero Academia downstairs and I didn't want to take him away from that. So I'm laying in the bed and Sarah comes in and she sees this kid get thrown into the steel cage. And she says, is that real blood? I say, yes. I say, you get thrown in face first into a steel cage, you're going to bleed. You got to be tough to be a wrestler. And she hears the name Jack Perry. Jim Ross goes, oh my God, Jack Perry, oh God. She goes, wait, did he say Jack Perry? I said, yeah, that's Luke's son. And everything stops for Sarah. And she's now emotionally invested in this character. And she sees this boy that she's known since he was probably, I don't know, 10 years old, bleeding. And then she sees his sister and mother in the crowd who are visibly shook and upset. And they're not part of the work. They're a part of the show, but they're not part of the work. When they see their brother or their son bleed, that affects a parent. I remember when my mom first saw me bleed in a boxing match when I was a kid, she threatened to beat the shit out of the kid's parents. Now, granted, my mom was like halfway through a 7-Eleven big gulp that she substituted a bottle of Chardonnay into. That was her go-to move, by the way, super gangster. There's an emotional investment from my wife right away. And she watches this young man who's half the size of Luchasaurus in weight and height practically try to come back time and time again. And each time he gets smashed back into the cage or smashed into the mat. They're bringing chairs into the ring because Christian Cage cheats and steals the key from the referee and opens the cage so that Luchasaurus, his right arm of destruction, can bring things in. But the ref sees it and security throws Christian Cage out. And the match even goes outside of the ring, which I thought I wouldn't be nuts about because it's a steel cage. I want it to happen in the steel cage. But they did their business outside and then got their way back into the ring with a table and two chairs now, which both come into play later. And Jack Perry, Jungle Boy Jack Perry, gets in the ring again and he's fighting for all he can. And Luchasaurus just keeps beating the living hell out of this kid, but he won't stay down. And eventually, instead of like, you know, when you get hit in the face, you're down for a while, eventually he starts getting mad and he gets angrier and angrier and he gets knocked down. And instead of staying down, it's like, screw the pain. And he stands back up right in Luchasaurus's face. Boom, down again, pops back up. Screw this. And he starts fighting for all he's worth. And this son of a bitch starts winning the match. He keeps he starts knocking Lucha down, takes out the leg, starts working on him more and more. Eventually, he gets Luchasaurus on the table. And this kid has gone through the ringer, okay? He's been stuck in between the cage and the ring. He's been thrown into the cage. His head is bleeding. Both guys were wearing masks at the end of it. One just happened to be a blood mask. And he finally climbs up to the top of the cage. And my wife legit says, well, he's not going to jump off of that, is he? And I say, because I see her emotional investment, I say, oh, he is. I just don't know what he's going to do. And he looks up to the sky. And for me, that moment was him looking to his dad. To me, I don't know if that's what he was doing, but to me, it looked like he was looking up at his dad. And I don't know if he's saying, this is for you, or I wish you could be here, or wait till you see this shit from heaven or hell or wherever his daddy is, if that's what you believe in. But wait till you see this. And he jumps off and hits a Macho Man elbow, blam, and the table cracks in half, boom, and Luchasaurus goes into the mat, ah, and he's down. And Jack Perry eventually gets the 1-2-3, and he beats Luchasaurus. He puts it right in his face, and this rivalry has been going on for a long time. Christian Cage has talked shit about his family, about his mother, I think about his father too, although it's been going on so long, I don't quite remember, but Christian has cut some nasty promos on this kid, like top shelf nasty heel promos using real stuff to evoke real emotion from the crowd. And it's worked to different varying levels of success. What did you think of the first match to kick off the AEW pay-per-view Full Gear?
I loved it. It's also a wrestling tale as old as time. Tag team partners who, you know, break up and turn on each other. This is very, very classic wrestling storytelling, and it was done well. I think they also both proved they can be singles. They could be single stars because they both did really, really great. It was fun to watch. It was believable. The big monster versus his ex-partner, who's a, like you said, a smaller guy. For a wrestler, he's small. Jack Perry's small for a wrestler. He's not small compared to regular people, and he's very muscular and cut, and he looks good. But for a wrestler, he's undersized for sure, which is makes you root for him. He's all heart, you know, and he's bleeding through, and he's fighting this scary dinosaur monster guy. It was such a fun match. I loved it. I thought it was a good way to start, and also just proved that both of them are super capable. I did think that the table should have been the last part of the match. I wish that had been like the big three count, but it's okay. It was still very, very fun. In the press conference afterwards, he mentioned that originally Jungle Boy, not only was it a gimmick, but Jungle Boy was just used so he didn't have to use Jack Perry, because with his dad's fame and his dad's celebrity, and also his dad's somewhat linked to wrestling with David Arquette and all that stuff. So it was kind of like a gimmick mixed with a way to hide his name. Now he's going to embrace it. But they did, when he came out, this is the first time they've ever had Jungle Boy, Jack Perry, all four. So it wasn't gone. He could have chose to say, don't call me Jungle Boy. But I think that it's going to forever be like a thing. But he's now got a name, Jack Perry, which I think is awesome. I still like Jungle Boy. It matches the hair and the clothes and the look. So, but I thought it was an awesome match. Yeah, and I thought it was just an awesome match. It was really good. I've liked him a long time, and you know how I feel about small wrestlers. So that's how impressed I am with him, that I was like, ew, even I'm liking Jack Perry.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Moving on, Mr. Dye, this was the first trios match I have ever liked in AEW. I watched it from start to finish, every single moment. There are even a couple where I feel things are over choreographed, and my daughter's like a big critic when they're all doing the same move because she just wants to see like an organic fight. We watch a lot of like mixed martial arts and stuff. So she'll say, ah, that's like too choreographed, Dad. And I tend to agree with her. And they did some of that in this match. But this was the Elite.
Yeah, they're all off suspension now.
That's right. So Death Triangle, which is all three of them, which is Pac, who has a story with Kenny Omega. And then these two luchadores who are brothers like the Young Bucks. 3 versus 3, but a tag match, even though there'll be times where tag matches break down and you'll see, you know, multiple members from each team in the ring, which is totally normal and acceptable in the world of professional wrestling. They told so many friggin' stories in this, and I thought they pulled it off beautifully.
I've never been that educated on Kenny Omega because I got to AEW late in my love of wrestling. I've heard people be highly critical of his work, and I've heard people that just hero worship this guy like a god. He was awesome. Everybody in this match, and I'm a sucker for a luchador, okay? So even if they suck, I'll be like, yo, man, that guy was tight. Nah, everybody in this match was flying all over the place. Oh, Braun Strowman would have hated it.
I was just going to say that. I was waiting. I was going to say that. That's going to go, hey, because I know we're not talking SmackDown and Raw, but like when Ricochet referenced his tweet on the thing in a promo, he said, oh, you know, the flippy floppy, like whatever. This match proves that Braun Strowman is a stupid idiot because this is the best wrestling in the world. Flippy flopping is the wrestling I prefer. Yeah.
There was so much acrobatic, high level athletic shit in this match. And I was committed all day long. Here's another thing. All the right people won on this pay-per-view. I was all in on this. And I mean, all in, yelling at the screen, hyped up, not knowing who was going to win. This match was so much fun. The flippy floppy stuff was great. I just call them acrobats. I mean, there was so much. If you want to critique this in any way, you could say there were too many super kicks because there were about 75 super kicks.
Never enough super kicks.
If you include everyone. But I love this match. This is going to be so much. I'm blowing so much smoke up AEW's ass today, but I don't care. I had a blast watching this match. I did not make my wife watch it, and I'm glad she didn't because she couldn't make fun of me cheering. What did you think about Team Flip Flop? How much did you love them?
This is my best of the week. And it was, yeah, it was so fun to watch. I'm also a big Kenny Omega guy. I think maybe because I bought in when AEW first started, like that there's this new guy that I should know about from Japan. He's the best. And like you said, they all hero worship him. And so I was like already like, all right, let's see. I love his look. I love his hair. I'm a big thing about like, I need my wrestlers to either be giants.
Bro, he's jacked too. He's buff.
Yeah, well, but like I need my wrestlers to be giants or I need them to be flippy floppy luchador guys. Like I don't like anything in the middle. I don't like when it's like a Shinsuke Nakamura where he's not a high flyer and he's not a big muscly guy, or like, I don't like a Daniel Bryanson where it's like, it's all technical. I like a giant or a flippy floppy guy. And Kenny Omega kind of breaks that rule for me. Because he's strong and he's also not a high flyer, but he's just so, every move seems perfectly executed. I like his look. So he's kind of breaks my mold of what I like. And I love Kenny Omega. Love the Young Bucks. They're also like these cult, like nobody's allowed to say anything bad about them. Pretty much every part of this match, I was surprised they weren't like blown out. I was surprised they weren't exhausted. They were going full speed, explosive the entire match.
They never slowed down.
It was amazing.
It was crazy.
I think that's why it was so great. I was like, I wish every match could feel like this, this fast-paced, high intensity. Every single spot was perfect. It was my best of the week.
I couldn't agree more on Pac, man. Neville was his name
right in
WWE. And I watched him on 205 Live. I hated when he had to lose to Enzo. I think he hated it too. I think that was pretty public. I didn't know why they couldn't find a way to utilize him more. I still think he isn't utilized to his full capacity, even in AEW. I think he cuts a mean promo. I think he can be a babyface that has to climb the mountain that you can root for, or a heel that is evil and talks trash and is willing to cheat to win. His moves are so crisp. His body is just jacked and perfect and super chiseled. And damn, dude, he's such a leader of that group of Death Triangle, such a leader of it. Mr. Die. It was time for Jade Cargill and Nyla Rose.
Your girl.
I did not want to watch this match. I hated this story with all my heart and soul. I feel like Jade Cargill is the single most underserviced wrestler in that company, even though she's undefeated. So you know they love her. But story-wise, I don't feel they've given her anything legit to make you care about a Jade Cargill match. And this storyline was no exclusion to that. The entrances were pretty hot. Nyla came out Eddie Guerrero style in a lowrider with Vicky Guerrero. And I think her shirt read, I'm Your Mommy instead of I'm Your Poppy, which was actually kind of cool.
I love it. Yep.
The music was cool and the entrance was quick. They didn't spend too much time in the lowrider. Again, all fast entrances. And then here comes Jade Cargill. And if you're my age, you grew up watching a cartoon called Thundercats. And she came out in a full Chitara cosplay. By the way, she liked my friend Alicia Marie's Chitara cosplay. So I know that's where she got the idea from. Shout out Alicia Marie. You should follow her on Instagram, Alicia Marie Body. She's a bodybuilder. She also builds all her own cosplays. She's one of the most beautiful women in the world. I think Jeff's actually met her before. She rules. But she came out looking like Thundercats and finally had the match. And here is a lesson to everyone that takes Jaded, which she calls her finisher, which was Beth Phoenix's Glam Slam. Nyla Rose gave the facials that you want a wrestler to have when they're going to get finished, both in the time that it failed and in the time that it succeeded. And she was shaking her head. No, I don't know. Please don't slam me. I don't want you to slam me. That is all that it takes. That's all it takes, ladies, when you're getting beat by Jade. And there's a lot more of you that are going to get your ass beat by Jade Cargill. She did get Jade's finisher off on Jade, which was cool, and Jade gave the proper facial results that you want to see there. That said, I wanted this match to be over quickly. I just wanted it to be done so that they can hopefully find a better story. It was not the greatest match. It was not the best match of the night. However, the right girl won, and she somehow picked Nyla Rose up. And Nyla Rose, for those of you who haven't seen her, is a large woman, like a Kia Stevens, like an Awesome Kong type. Maybe not that big, but she's big. And Jade held her up, no problem. The power bomb was tough, but you knew that would be tough. But she held her up. She looked strong as hell. Blam! Slammed her down, flipped her over. 1, 2, 3. Got her belt back and gave her the middle finger while the ref raised her hand, which was great. What say you, Mr. Dye?
I liked it. I liked the way they were able to showcase that Jade Cargill is the strongest woman in wrestling, in my opinion, or in like at least in AEW. The fact that she could just lift up Nyla Rose on multiple times during the match, lifted her up and just was like, yeah, she's bigger than me and watch. Like that's what we should be showcasing, how strong Jade Cargill actually is. I have opinions about a TBS title. I'm still, every time I see it, I go, wait, they named the belt after the channel we're watching? So that feels like a little strange and weird to me. But
that's a good point.
But I do love Jade. I'm glad she's got the strap. I was not a big Nyla Rose fan. I thought it felt weird. Anything to see less of Vicky Guerrero is good for me.
I love Jade Cargill, man. I really hope they give her a meaningful storyline. And I guess maybe you save it till she loses, and then it's her sort of story of redemption. Maybe that's what they're waiting for. Maybe I'm being overcritical. Maybe some of y'all have enjoyed the storylines for her. But I think when you have a unicorn, you have to treat that beast differently than any other mythical beast or regular beast in the story. Like, lions and tigers and bears are cool, but a unicorn, a minotaur, a Cerberus, like all these other like mythical Greek creatures, like they're magic, and they were treated that way in the stories I read as a kid. And that's what Jade is, man. She's a unicorn.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are moving on to the fatal four-way match between Chris Jericho, Claudio Castagnoli, Sammy Guevara, and Brian Danielson, who you called Daniel Bryanson earlier in the podcast.
Yeah, well, it's easy to confuse. It's easy to mix up.
They've changed his name so many times from WWE to now. Fatal four-ways are hard. They did a pretty damn good job getting guys out of the ring and focusing on two people. Again, I loved this match. I thought the right guy won, which was Chris Jericho. And they told multiple stories. They had Claudio and Brian beating the crap out of Jericho and Sammy, two at a time and one at a time. Whoever you pin in a fatal four-way match, it doesn't matter if it's the champ or not, you become the champion. Then they told the same story with Sammy and Chris, because Sammy saw an opportunity that he was about to lose, and he knocked Jericho off of what would have been a 1-2-3. Jericho retains the championship. But again, I thought they told good, solid stories in here. They comboed off each other's signature moves very well. I totally liked this match. I was nervous going into this match. I didn't know how good a story they could tell. But I guess when you have those three veterans and a young kid who's just willing to do anything to his body in Sammy Guevara, then that's my bad for underestimating them. I love this match. What about you, Mr. Dye?
I liked it. Like I said, there wasn't a single match that I didn't enjoy this week. This one, you know, wasn't the craziest, best thing I've ever seen, but I really enjoyed it. I liked it. I loved the finish. I also want to note, I just love Jericho so much. I'm such a Jericho mark, but
dude, I don't know how he's still this damn good.
It's amazing. Jericho helps young guys in a way that is so, he has no ego about it. He's not threatened by young guys the way CM Punk and John Cena seem to be. He genuinely loves these young guys and wants to see them be the future of the business. And it's the most like selfless pro wrestling, positive professional wrestling thing in all of wrestling, in my opinion. I love Jericho for it. And this match kind of proved it.
I love the way you phrased that. I think selfless is a smart word here because Chris is no dummy, right? Like he knows he'll still put himself over in interviews and things like that. And he'll take credit for things, but he's very quick to share credit as well. And he's always willing to put a young star over. And I don't think that happens enough in professional wrestling. I don't think at WWE, he simply wouldn't be allowed to do that. Whereas you can tell he has a very strong, powerful voice in this company. Like he is the senior vice president of AEW is what it feels like. But he's so smart. He said something wonderful about Pat Patterson, where he talked about people still singing the song, his entrance song, Judas. And which my son even likes when it's on the radio, he makes me turn it up. And that's a babyface thing for the crowd to sing along to your song. And even though he's a heel, he said, Pat Patterson told me, you're working for a reaction. It doesn't matter if that reaction is positive or negative. You're working for that reaction. And when you get it, don't step on it. And again, we've talked about this a lot. You can remove heel and babyface from wrestlers that simply know how to get themselves over. I think you tend to save heel and babyface tags for the wrestlers that need that help getting over. He does not. And that's why I'm totally okay with him keeping that song and having the people sing along to it. But you're so right. Like he even does the little Sammy poses. Like he poses so like effeminately over Sammy, like when they do that. And it's to get Sammy's thing over, to help that bit get over. And now, sir, we move on to Saraya versus Britt Baker. And it wasn't the worst match of the night. I think I'm saving that for the Wardlow Hobbs and Samoa Joe match.
Interesting. Okay.
But you could see a little ring rust there. The match didn't have the same heartbeat as the matches leading up to it. It had to be a little bit slower. So maybe that's why I didn't dig it, but it just seemed a bit off to me. The entrances, again, money. The beginning of the match, money. But the middle and the end of the match, I just thought felt like these two women didn't know each other that well. I thought I was going to want to watch three or four of these matches. And I don't now. The chemistry wasn't there. And I don't know if it's Saraya not being in the ring for a long time, or sometimes like in a movie, you just don't have chemistry with the person you're working with, and all their instincts go against all your instincts, and it changes the way you execute your lines, or you're changing the way they execute their lines, and the scene seems wonky, and you have to get saved by an editor who knows how to put the camera on the right person's face. You can't do that in a live match. And I really felt this match suffered because of it. I respect the hell out of both these women. Britt Baker built the women's division, built it damn near by herself, one could argue. She's money on the mic and she's money in the ring. Saraya, I love to death. I love her sacrifice that she's made for this business, but I could not emotionally get behind this match outside of her brother yelling early on, where he's like, come on, Saraya, get it. And I was just like, oh my God, you're breaking my heart, brother. Like that part was beautiful. But the middle and end of this match, I thought, wasn't as good as it needed to be. and hopefully wasn't as good as it can be in the future. But what say you?
I liked the match. I thought it was fine. And I think it also proved that, you know, that Saraya can take bumps and she's actually can wrestle. I think I expected some ring rust.
She took some.
So like all the criticisms I have of that, like I was totally going into the match expecting. My only criticism was the finish. I'd be pretty annoyed if I'm Britt Baker.
It just was lackluster. And maybe it's because of the matches that preceded it were just nonstop, 100 miles per hour, hairs on fire. But it wasn't my favorite. And I don't want to bag on it, so I don't want to spend too much time. That's going to take us to the TNT Championship with Wardlow as the champion, Samoa Joe as your Ring of Honor champion, and Hobbs, who came out of nowhere off this Ricky Stark storyline, and I think is a surprise, a delightful surprise on the microphone. His mic work has been good building up to this. I love his look. I love the way his face looks. I love the way his body looks. I love that he was this extra element to this match. It didn't click, man. There were blown spots. There were sells when nothing happened. It had to be a quick match, I guess, but it just felt weird. I still think the right guy won. It's nice to see Samoa Joe with two titles. And I think that helps Hobbs get an opportunity against Samoa Joe. And Hobbs is the real deal, man. I love the standing suplex that he gave Wardlow where he held him up for like 10 seconds and then put him down. That really showcased his power to pick up a dude that friggin' big. But I didn't feel this match at all. What about you, bro?
I don't think they know what to do with Wardlow. I just don't think that they know where he's going to fit or what's going to work with him. It's almost like Jade Cargo. Like they just haven't found that lane yet for Wardlow. I like Wardlow. I'm a believer for sure. I think he could be really, really, really great and different. And he's got a great look and he seems capable. They haven't found what works for him. Here's the thing you're going to hate and everyone listening is going to hate. I don't like Samoa Joe. I think he is so overrated.
What?
You know, still a fun, entertaining match or whatever. But I just don't like Samoa Joe.
I hate you so much right now. I will say this. It is art, and opinions on art can't be wrong. It's not like it's, hey, what's 3 + 3 is 6, for those of you who don't know. It's art, and so if you connect to it, you do. If you don't, you don't. I don't like Picasso paintings. All right, so moving on to old men that still wrestle. The no DQ match with Sting and Darby Allin. Darby being the young one, Sting being the old man, for those who don't know, versus Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal, Jeff Jarrett being the old man, who, by the way, his body looked freaking great, and Jay Lethal, who I'm big on. I've been big on for a long time. I wanted this to be a singles match between the two guys. They took the match out of the ring for a lot of it, which I thought was a nice breakup and change of pace from the pay-per-view. They pulled this off, and I like this. I didn't love the match, but I liked the match. What about you?
This was my worst of the week.
Okay, hit me, dude.
I just feel like I would love to see those two young guys fight each other in singles. You know what I'm saying? Like, it would have been fine if I just see them. I'm getting a little tired of Sting and Jeff Jarrett. I felt like them being in there, which is good for them, that they can still do it and they still look good and all that stuff. And it was, for my nostalgic brain, very exciting. But I'd rather just see Darby Allin versus Jay Lethal. Like, and then that, let's just watch that match and see what these young guys can do.
I can't argue with you on that. I mean, like I said, for what they can do, I thought they did a good job, but I said this in the buildup for it. I really felt it could have just been those two guys, Darby versus Jay. If you need Darby to go over, cool. All right, moving on. This match is my best of the week. We have the AEW Interim World Women's Championship, even though it should have been for the just legit Women's Championship. Jamie Hayter versus the champ. We all know her. We all love her. Australia's own Toni Storm. I was completely surprised by the end of this match. I thought there's no way in hell they're going to let Jamie Hayter win. There's no way. She's too young. These women, before the interference came, and the interference was in the last 2 minutes of the match, which led to the finish of the match. But I think they let them go probably 20, maybe 25 minutes. I wasn't timing it. I should have. I think that's cool to time the matches to see how long the people get. But I just forgot because I was digging the pay-per-view so much. They beat the hell out of each other. and went back and forth 50-50 the whole time. They were giving you great false finishes. These women were awesome. They both have the look of a champion. I loved this match. I could not believe Hayter got the three count. I was saying this. I hope she, when we did our predictions, I hope she wins. I don't think she's gonna. I couldn't be happier. I was wrong. The interference protected Tony, so Tony doesn't look weak. I thought it was great storytelling. It's my match of the week. You probably hated it because you're a jerk and hate Samoa Joe. What say you?
How could you say that to me? That's not fair. I am your friend.
I'm a jerk. I'm a jerk.
I thought it was awesome. Like, it was just very, very good. And I, like I said, I didn't predict or I didn't expect that ending. I was very, very happy with it. Also, she might be the first female to ever win the championship without crying. She didn't sit in the ring and go, ugh. Like, she just won it, celebrated, yeah, did her
heels,
thing.
Heels don't cry, baby.
Pretty badass. I think she's great, and I think she's a star. I think she's going to be a big star.
I don't know where they're going to go storyline-wise. Maybe Thunder Rosa is much closer to coming back than we realize. But I would watch these two women wrestle every single week. I don't care. I might not even care if there's a story because the match was so damn good. Now we shall move on, my friend, to the match that Freddie called perfectly. The prognosticator of prognosticators. Better than a groundhog predicting the end of winter. Ladies and gentlemen, the AEW Tag Team Champions, The Acclaimed versus Keith Lee and Swerve, Swerve in our glory. Jeff, tell the people how smart your friend Freddie Prinze Jr. is.
He knows his wrestling. That's something about Freddie. When it comes to games, when it comes to acting, when it comes to video games, not just board games, not just turnstile games. When it comes to wrestling,
yes,
Freddie Prinze Jr. knows his shit.
Yes. When it comes to politics and science, I'm pretty stupid.
Well, I did get
3+3 correct earlier in the podcast. Well, that's true, too. I think the George Carlin approach. I called this match. I knew it was going to happen. Now, granted, you could see this coming. The finish was exactly what I said it was. Word for word, they're going back and forth. These guys crushed it from the rap when he came out, which was pretty damn good. He's like, oh, hold on, I got more. And then busted on him with another rap, which was money. I can't rap, so I'm not going to reenact it. The match was tons of fun. I love watching them. I have an emotional investment with both guys every time they cut a promo. I want to either hate them or love them, and they get it right every time when they're on the mic. What say you, Buckaroo?
I like all these guys. I'm a fan. Or I'm sorry. I like Swerve and Our Glory. That's what I like. That's what I meant. Those two guys. I'd love to watch them fight singles. I'm happy with them being the tag teams. I'm just not a big tag team guy generally. So I thought this match was awesome. I thought it was cool. I thought it was very, very fun to watch. And it was a nice little precursor to the big main event.
Let's get to that main event. Because the main event, as you all know, was the AEW World Championship match. Champion Jon Moxley escorted to the ring by Sir William Regal, Lord William Regal, versus Satan himself. But the Satan we love, like Al Pacino in The Devil's Advocate. Maxwell Jacob Friedman. You people know him as MJF, my favorite wrestler. I know how excited you were for this match, Jeffrey. So why don't you start with your love and celebration of the World Championship?
You know, MJF has been overlooked. Even though we talk about him every single week, we talk about how great he is on the mic. We talk about every podcast does. Jim Cornette, nobody shuts up about this MJF guy, right? But every time that there's a moment that he's about to have, it gets some other thing is what we end up all gossiping and talking about. Almost like we have a mutual agreement that MJF is the best and we don't need to talk about him because he's the best. It's always like some offshoot thing that we want to gossip about, like CM Punk popping off while eating muffins at the end of a press conference. Nobody's talking about how great MJF was that night. Finally, MJF gets to show how good he is. Not only, finally we get to see, gets to prove to Jeff that he's very, very good in the ring also. God, I was talking trash about how he just doesn't wrestle enough and it's just too much I got to watch him in the ring and I was like, oh, he's proven daddy wrong. Like, the guy is so stinking good. And the William Regal sliding him the brass knuckles and that, it was, I will say,
bro.
That's so good.
This match was beautiful. This guy talked about how he is a generational wrestler. And then he named all these great generational wrestlers. And then legit was doing some of their old school moves in the beginning of this match with the back rake and the stomp jab and all these like old school things to show his knowledge and respect of the old, and then bringing in everything that is the new that we all love as well. He sold the knee beautifully. He played the baby face and the heel in this match, which is impossible to do, but somehow he does it every single time he works nowadays. He's wrestling against the werewolf, John Moxley. I know that's not his name, but I'm going to say it so much that it becomes his nickname. And you'll hear JR, oh my God, it's like a werewolf in the ring. Oh God. These guys got in the ring and it looked like a straight up fist fight. They were beating the living crap out of each other. MJF told a story with his knee and it looked legit, like he legit hurt his knee, even though that's just a part of the story. He's going to punch him with the diamond ring that he won all those years ago. Mm-hmm. And William Regal comes out and he's just looking at him like, you piece of shit. That's what you're going to do to win. That's what you're going to do to win. And you see MJF have this morality check. The referee is down. MJF used the ref to save his own life. The ref gets hurt. They bring out another ref. Moxley cracks that ref. When he gets thrown into the ropes, that ref's out. Now he's got to get the original ref's attention. MJF taps out at one point, but the ref's screwed up in the corner and still selling, so he doesn't see it. And then William Regal, who, if you remember, when he was a wrestler, it read one word across both ass cheeks, and that word was villain. And he turns his back on the champion of AEW and his champion of the Blackpool Combat Club, and he gives MJF the Regal brass knuckles. And MJF busts him with a right hand, bam, right in the friggin' head, and stuffs the brass knuckles in his whitey-tidy trunks that he wears with the diamond ring. They're both in there, I think. Maybe he threw the ring away. And he gets the win, 1, 2, 3. The ref didn't see it. And for the first time in his career, he is the AEW World Friggin' Champion. And I can't wait to see who they bring out of the woodwork to try and take this belt off him. I loved this pay-per-view. It was well worth the money. Anyone who missed it, go check out the replay. Even if you've already seen the results, the storytelling was masterful. The wrestlers, the young wrestlers were great. The old wrestlers did their thing. The journeymen and veterans kicked ass. Like, I loved everything about this, man. I thought, look, when wrestling gets it wrong, you and I say when they get it wrong. I don't think we pull too many punches, although I do try to be as nice as possible, because I respect the sacrifice they make. But damn, if they didn't get this right from top to bottom. Shout out to AEW. Shout out to Tony Khan. Jeff, tell the people where they can see your fifth grade chess this weekend.
I will be in Calgary doing comedy for a cause on Friday. If you go to my social medias, just Jeff Dye, or go to jeffdye.com, you can find where to find me at all the future weekends and this weekend. What are you doing for Thanksgiving, Freddie?
I'm cooking for the family. By the way, Calgary, that's wrestling country, baby. That's wrestling country. I'll be cooking. I asked my kids what they wanted. I asked if they wanted me to mix it up. I could do Cornish game hens. They didn't want anything out of the ordinary, so it'll be the standard mashed potatoes, turkey gravy, the giblet gravy, or giblet, however you like to say it. There'll be some green beans, which the adults like, the kids don't. Some spaghetti squash, which the kids love. Big-ass Caesar salad, which everybody on earth loves. Cranberry relish, not cranberry sauce. We're a relish household. Some New Mexico cornbread with some green chili baked in the bread. Come on. You can't handle the heat, baby. That's that Latino heat. And then all the grownups will get drunk on wine. And I'll keep it sober until the actual dinner time. And then I'll join the adults in their drunkenness.
Sounds awesome.
So happy Thanksgiving to you, Jeff.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, buddy. And to you, Alex. And to all the people that listen to our podcast. We love you guys and appreciate you guys. Spread the word.
We do. And this was Wrestling with Friends.
Peace. We out. Follow us on Instagram, Wrestling with Freddie. Twitter is WWFreddiePod. Follow us on all the socials so you can submit your questions for the Federation.
This has been a production of iHeart's My Cultura Podcast Network. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.